Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We're chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Also writes the Mark to Market blog, which I will post below this interview. I visit that site pretty much every day just to keep up to date on the data and market moves that are catching Mark's attention. Mark, because you're a currency guy, let's start with the US dollar. You have been on the show saying, generally, in a longer term sense, you are bearish on the dollar. The dollar has recently bounced, but again, it's not screaming higher. It's still a very mixed trade, and I think there are still a lot of general bears for the dollar. However, you look at a slightly longer term chart and just balance out what the dollar has done so far this year. It did manage to put in a slightly higher low from way back in 2018, the last time it was back at that 88 level, 88.15. Now the dollar kind of hanging around just above 90, right around 92 right now. Mark, what are your thoughts? Have you changed from being a dollar bear to a dollar bull after this recent short rebound?
No, I think that, you know, the dollar did have this rebound. The rebound for the dollar began before the hawkish FOMC meeting. So this week, the dollar is snapping a 3 or 4 week advance. And I think that it could be the beginning of a new leg lower for the dollar. I think that in the short term, that is in the next few days, I would look for the dollar to broadly consolidate ahead of the jobs report at the end of next week. But, you know, when we were talking last week, I was talking about, you know, we talk about macro fundamentals, we can talk about technicals, but last week I thought it was like sort of a quantitative issue. And that is that the dollar had moved so rapidly, so in such a short period of time, that it was really around 3 standard deviations away from the 20-day moving average, which is, you know, the Bollinger Bands that we talk about technically, 2 standard deviations. This was another standard deviation beyond that. And so I thought that the rubber band doesn't stretch that far. And so even though, so the dollar snapped back, that is the dollar pulled back in the last few days, but it hasn't gone through some key levels. So for me, the key level on the upside for the euro is 120, and we stopped at around 119.75. Sterling is 140, maybe just a little bit above 140, and we stopped there as well, and Sterling's going to finish the week, looks like it's going to straddle the 139 level. Aussie tested the 76 cent level, and it's pulled back as well. So to me, the currencies had bounced off their lows, but didn't get really high enough to get excited yet. And I think that's why I'm biased towards looking for like a broad range trade ahead of the next big move. I see that the MACD's moving average convergence divergence and the slow stochastic is turning down for the dollar. And so the momentum, I think, has broken after. Again, it's been a 3 to 4 week dollar rally, and I think it's over, but I really need that jobs data to help confirm it. It's not the jobs data so much as how the market responds to it.
Now, when you mean how the market responds to it, is that a carryover to how the market thinks the Fed will respond to it? Because it still seems like all eyes, I guess rightfully so, are on the Fed, but again, we're still seeing bad economic data be taken positively by markets because of the expectation of what the Fed will do.
Yeah, I think that the market is pretty set on what it thinks the Fed's going to do. And that is, the Fed is going to taper. It's going to make the announcement of tapering well before it actually tapers. The market's looking for that announcement in late August or the September FOMC meeting. And that has not really changed since earlier this year. I think what has changed is that we had the median dot plot move to 2 hikes in 2020. And here's the thing that surprises me. I was looking back, because all this talk about letting the economy run hot, I'm old enough to remember we've tried this before. I'm looking at an article from the Wall Street Journal in 2016 where Yellen is saying the same thing. And then I remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, Alan Greenspan was saying the same thing. He was having this great experiment of letting the economy run hotter because he thought that our productivity measures weren't doing it justice as we rolled out, we called it at the time, Wintel, right? Windows and Intel chip. And so I think we've gone down this route before, and I just think that there's institutionally a pushback against letting the economy run hot because the Federal Reserve you know, our central bank is not a creature of the government. It is really formed by private sector banks. So if you try to look up the Fed's website, you can't go .gov. It's .org. And that's real meaning there. And so I don't think that the Federal Reserve, the DNA, wants the economy to run hot, because that means inflationary, they think. And what the creditor class dislikes is inflation. And so I think that this is, like, for me, Powell is really continuity, formalizing things that Yellen had talked about and that Greenspan had talked about, and that average inflation target is one way to try to formalize it. But I think what we've seen in recent days is several Fed officials admitting that they see a hike necessary in 2022, not just wait until 2023. Remember, we have 7 of the 18 Fed officials that think that they need to raise rates next year. And I was looking at this ahead of next week's jobs data, asking myself, how long is it going to take us at the current pace of job creation to get back to where we were at the end of 2019? And just like very conservative assumptions, it looks like it's going to take us through the first 3 quarters of next year at least.
Well, Mark, this inflation discussion is obviously ongoing. And it's interesting because for a long time, we heard from Fed officials that they wanted to get to that 2% target. They wanted to get to that 2% target. And then they said, okay, we may let it run a little hotter than 2%. But then when the numbers came in a little bit too hot and some of the Fed officials started talking about hiking earlier, they said it caught them by a little surprise, but don't worry, it's just transitory. We're still waiting to see, you know, how things play out. And it may be that over the next month or two, we see some of these initial issues like the semiconductors and some of the commodities pulling back and maybe things cool. But do you think that they've let a genie out of the bottle that they may not be able to get back in the bottle? Because if this inflation does start running too hot and it forces their hand to hike rates earlier, as you just mentioned, some are starting to circle their wagons on that idea. Won't that potentially cause another taper tantrum in the markets? Because that could put a lid on things.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think that is that's one, definitely one scenario that could happen. That is to say that inflation is really of longer lasting than the Fed is acknowledging right now. But I'll tell you, at the end of the day, I'm thinking that almost in the opposite risk. I've looked at the last several U.S. economic downturns. They've all been preceded by roughly a doubling of the price of oil. I think the U.S. economy is very near a peak. We're beginning to get more economic data suggesting that, well, the economic data is beginning to come in again below expectations. And I wonder if what's happening is that the fiscal stimulus is largely spent. It'll still linger for a little bit longer, but the bulk of it's spent. The major cities in the U.S. are reopening. So that initial surge has also seems to be largely running its course. Of course, there's a little bit more left in the tank, but we're past the peak. And I wonder if a year from now, we're going to be talking not about how fast the economy is growing, but how the economy is going back below 3% growth. And in my experience, though, it doesn't always work this way. I'm old enough to remember the stagflation days. But we did have, typically, we should expect for the price cycle, inflation, to peak around the time, perhaps a little bit after the economy does. And what I'm looking at with the prices is a couple things. Powell, in his press conference, he gave two examples. One was lumber, which today is making new lows. It's really coming off hard here today ahead of the weekend. And so this is about 40, 50% pullback from the high we made just a couple of months ago. So lumber is fitting into that Powell transitory price pressures. But he also mentioned used cars. And used cars are kind of interesting because the used vehicles, broadly understood, was accounted for about a third of the headline rise of inflation, of U.S. CPI. And it's hard to tell because the used car market is not as transparent as one might hope for. But it does look like the wholesale market has peaked. And remember why the wholesale market was important. Many of the fleets, many of the large buyers, institutional buyers, like the rental car companies, they began buying used cars to fill out their lot, partly because they couldn't get the new cars because of the semiconductor shortage. Same thing that a lot of people did. Instead of buying the new models, they found that they could, instead of waiting for the new models, they could buy the previous model. And so I wonder if we're not going to see price pressures beginning to ease now that the seasonal or the bench, so the base effect has worn off or is going to be dropping out, and the opening, the adjustment of prices to the reopening. You know, a year ago, airline tickets were very cheap. Nobody was flying. Now more people are flying. Tickets go back up to where they were before. Is that inflation? I don't know. But I do agree with you that we, it's sort of like that William Blake poem about how the world ends with fire, inflation, or ice, deflation. And I'm still biased towards thinking that this is just an inflation scare, but perhaps it's scary enough for the Fed. So by the time they tighten, the economy will already be slowing down.
Well, Mark, let me throw one more wild card at you then. You'd mentioned us filling up our tank as a nation. There's still some left as far as the reopening trade. But speaking of filling up tanks, you also brought up the oil price. And one question I would have is, with a higher oil price, that's going to affect all goods and services, freight, shipping. It's basically a form of inflation in itself. And if you believe that the dollar is going to head down, even though the commodities have pulled back, and they have, and even though lumber's pulled back, and I think the used car phenomenon is a passing trend that will eventually get solved once the semiconductors come back and we get new car prices coming down. But if oil prices stay up and if the dollar goes down, it'll still underpin a value in commodities. And we're also seeing wages go up. And when you see wages go up, at the same time the price inputs are going up, it often leads to cost push inflation. So couldn't the falling dollar, the rising oil, and the rising wages still push inflation beyond what people are expecting and beyond this base effect narrative?
Yeah, no, you're right. And if you take a look at the annualized pace, so leave aside the base effect, you just add up the 5 months of CPI we have and annualize it, and you'll see CPI is running well above 5% already. But I think that you have an interesting point about oil. I think there's truly two ways to think about crude oil, because you're right. Despite our embracing of green, oil still is an important commodity input into a lot of goods as well as transportation. And I'll tell you, I think that this is the way that the U.S. views it differently than, say, the way the ECB views it. In the U.S., higher oil prices tends to be associated by policymakers as a tax on consumers. That effect is really deflationary, because the more it takes to fill up a car full of gas, the less money you have for discretionary spending, which is where the demand push comes from. On the other hand, Europe tends to view higher oil prices as inflationary. And in 2008, when oil prices were around $160 a barrel, the ECB raised interest rates just as the economy was going into a deep recession. So my sense is that, and I think you're right, there's still more upside in oil. What we had this week, U.S. oil inventories continue to fall. And what we heard this week was China's inventories are near the lowest level for the year. They also are basically consuming more oil than they're buying. And so the decline in inventories, while you have strong demand, I see increasing number of people calling for $100 a barrel for oil. And as you know, we're hovering around, say, $73 to $75 now. So that, I think it's interesting, that last leg up in oil could be why you have that price cycle peaking after the GDP peaks.
Interesting, Mark. How this all could time out, who knows exactly, right? How this is all going to play out and when the Fed will actually get tighter, and how that times with the economy maybe cooling some of that growth that we're seeing. But right now, there's a risk on trade and a trade into growth again and big tech stocks. This has supported the markets before. This is also a bit of a change from that more defensive trade or more asset-based trade that investors had at least the start of this year. What's your takeaway from this general shift we've seen in the last just couple weeks now in investor motivation, where they're putting money?
Yeah, I think it's a tough call. I mean, for me, it's difficult because I can't find the right stocks right now, besides, of course, the stocks that are going to be in my mutual fund. If I'm going to be able to add value to my portfolio, it's not buying the stocks that my portfolio managers have bought in the mutual funds I have. I can't find what the theme is. I know that with the U.S. banks having passed a stress test, they're going to be giving an estimated $140 billion back to investors in dividends and buybacks, and that'll be announced probably next week. But I think you're right, too, that maybe there is something with this looking at this rotation. I track the Russell 1000 value and the Russell 1000 growth stocks, and it does appear that value has been doing better lately. I just don't know if I have much conviction in it yet.
Fair enough. That is that rotation trade, though, and it's been something that I think you do need to pay close attention to when you're looking at these markets and even different sectors, including currencies. Mark, thanks as always for your time. Great chatting with you on this Friday. I hope you have a great weekend, and we'll chat again next week. Thanks again, Mark.
Thanks. Good luck to everybody.